The views and comments expressed on The Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on The Space Show are primarily for educational purposes. Welcome to The Space Show, an hour of exploring new frontiers and exciting opportunities in outer space. Here is your host, Dr. David Livingston.
Hello, everybody. This is your host, David Livingston. Welcome back to The Space Show. Thank you for tuning in tonight, because this is going to be a particularly interesting and informative political show for a very political season in a year where, in my opinion, politics is probably more important and influential in space than almost anything else. But first, the usual announcements. If you're in the Seattle area and you would like to call the program, that number for you to use is area code 425-573-5527. And outside of Seattle, it is toll-free 1-866-687-7223. And if you are going to use that toll-free line, remember, let it ring until it's answered. When it's answered, you're on the air. There are no call screeners, but wait until we can get to you. Email, of course, dmlivings@yahoo.com or drspace@thespaceshow.com. And if you want to connect with us using chat for Instant Messenger, ICQ, or CompuServe, it's all one word, Space Show Chat. And then this program will be on the website, thespaceshow.com, archived tomorrow. Check it out. You will be able to hear it at your convenience. Visit the Space Show store when you can, and you'll see a big button on the website for Support the Space Show. If you agree that what we're doing is important, help us out. That button takes you directly to a special PayPal button, and we would appreciate any support that you can give us. And then the newsletter is uploaded every Monday. You can read it on the news on the website, and you can subscribe to the email version of it. Just make sure you can get a mass mailing from drspace@thespaceshow.com, and if you run a spam filter, you've got to open a door in that filter for that mass mailing. Otherwise, it'll bounce back and get removed from our database. So our guest today is someone I've known ever since I started my dissertation work back in 1995 when I first met him in Phoenix at a space conference, just when I was fact-finding for how to write my dissertation. And he's been a long time getting him on the show. He's really busy. He's right in the heart of everything political that you could ever dream of with space. Our guest is Jim Muncy, and he is the founder of Polyspace, which is an independent space policy consultancy. And in the early part of 2000, it was formed to help space entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs succeed at the nexus of space business, technology, and public affairs. His clients include several firms in the emerging private human spaceflight industry and companies offering commercial services to NASA's spaceflight programs. His first client was the U.S. Air Force's military space plane program. Let's see. His bio is really long. I want to hit the highlights so we can get right to Mr. Muncy. From 97 until 2000, he served on the professional staff of the House Science Committee Space and Aeronautics Subcommittee. In addition to being Chairman Dana Rohrabacher's staff designee, he held the leadership legal responsibility and lead responsibility on issues and programs such as RLVs, human spaceflight commercialization, military space technology, export control reform, all sorts of things, as well as the NASA future. And prior to this, he spent over 2 years on Representative Rohrabacher's personal staff as his legislative assistant for space. It goes on and on. I mean, Jim has really been around, but also he is a co-founder of the Space Frontier Foundation, which all of you have heard talked about on this program many, many times before. Earlier than that, he had served on the board of directors for the National Space Society and the L5 Society. And it's a pleasure and a real honor to have Jim Muncy on The Space Show. How are you today, Jim?
Great.
Thank you.
You're great.
Thank you for being here. I have done so many shows with guests that have opinions on how advocacy should work, how the political system works, what it's like talking to Congress, the best way to do that. Man, you're right there in the trenches, and you know it better than anyone else. So start us at the beginning. If you want to have an interest in space and see if you can't influence your representative or your senator, my first question is, do you really have a chance at making any kind of an impression on them?
Yes, you do. I mean, congressmen and senators need your vote. So when you're speaking to your elected representative or to a candidate who's running against them for office, you absolutely have their attention. Now, you only have their attention for a very short period of time. That may even mean a short amount of time for a staff member. You have to know what it is you want. You really need to, you know, think about what your goal is in contacting them. Is it, you know, to get them to do a specific thing, or is it more general? Typically, when you make a specific request, you get more feedback, and there's a better chance that they can deal with it, if it's within their power to do something. If you just say, I love space, you should support space, you know, they'll thank you very much for your opinion and say they'll record that opinion, and then they'll basically ignore you because you haven't asked them to do anything. Congressmen and senators and candidates for office want to please voters. That's not a bad thing. It's how the process works. It's called representative democracy. But you have to tell them what it is you want, and make a case for it. And obviously it all depends on who your congressman or senator is or the candidate is or, you know, what it is you're looking for, where in the country you're based, you know, whether or not they are on a committee that can make a difference about what you're asking about, et cetera. So it's all situational, but generically, yes, citizens can have a huge impact on their elected representatives with regards to space policy, particularly because space isn't an area like, you know, defense policy or abortion or tax policy that, you know, almost everybody in the district or, you know, a whole lots of people, thousands and thousands of people are writing or calling their congressman or senator about those issues. Space is much less visible and much less of a high priority to most citizens. Now, there's a drawback to that. The drawback is that generally members of Congress don't care that much about space for that reason. But you will stand out if you write an effective, clear, well-typed, you know, well-reasoned and concise letter. Phone calls are not as good as letters. Emails are not as good as letters. Letters, either mailed or faxed, are the most effective way, or obviously talking to a staffer or the member in person, if you can arrange that, especially back in the district.
So how cynical is it for me to suggest that you get a lot more influence if you give them money for their campaign? Is it really cynical? Is it correct? Is it accurate? Not accurate at all? Does it matter?
What was it Churchill said? The democracy is the worst possible form of government except for all the others. The fact is that we don't have public financing of elections in this country. I think public financing would be a terrible thing. What we have is free associations of people deciding that they want to contribute money to support a candidate for office. And therefore, you know, within certain limits, that has a sort of a market. It's a market test. You know, if you're a rational candidate and you have a chance of winning and it looks like you're in tune with the district or the state, you have a chance of raising money. The fact is incumbents can raise a lot more money than challengers can simply because they're on committees, they're in the Congress, and they can influence policy. But if you're an individual and you can make a contribution of $50 or $100 to a candidate, that will make a difference. That will, you know, that will come to their attention. It's probably more effective to try to attend a fundraising event, whether it's a barbecue fundraiser or something, you know, that's not a black tie type, you know, thing for $1,000 contributors. You want to go to one where it's more of a citizens type of event, and get, you know, a minute or two of time with the candidate and talk to them about the issue so that they know you're there as a supporter. And yes, it, you know, it will make a difference for them to hear you. It also makes a huge difference if you volunteer in the campaign. Time is something more people can give sometimes than money. And there's always a need for volunteers. There's always a need for people to do the mechanics and, you know, the phone calling, phone banks, you know, and all the other sorts of mechanical things that have to be done as part of an election. So you can make a difference. You can have an impact, and you can have an influence.
So let's hold it right there. The break is coming. And we will pick this up on the other side with our guest today, Jim Muncy, and we will get into the thick of it with this year being, at least from my perspective, a phenomenal political space year. We'll be right back.
The Space Show would like to take a moment to thank each of you for listening and giving this program both praise and support. The Space Show, like other talk radio programs, depends upon advertisers and sponsors for their help and financial support. Tell your favorite business about the great advertising opportunities still available on The Space Show. Our ad packages are affordable, creative, and effective. They include web links and advertising, streaming internet play, as well as our very own internet radio station, in combination with your ad, on the Tuesday evening KKNW Seattle Space Show broadcast. Ad packages can be customized to fit your budget, and we know that we can have a positive impact on your business. For more information about advertising or sponsoring The Space Show, call Dr. Livingston at 415-435-6018 or send an email to drspace@thespaceshow.com.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show. And I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And The Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality.
And welcome back to The Space Show. This is your host, David Livingston. Our guest today, Jim Muncy with Polyspace. And before we get back to the show, I would like to do a quick trivia question for you. And if you call in on the toll-free line 1-866-687-7223, and you're the first one to answer this really easy question, you get your choice of either the book Mars, the NASA Mission Reports Volume 2, the great CD you hear for bumper music To Touch the Stars, or the book Space Trivia by William Pogue, former astronaut. So here is the question. All you have to do is give us the name of the first family of modern Chinese rockets. So if you're the first to call that toll-free number, and you can do that, you get your choice of prizes. Jim, welcome back.
Hey.
As I've been saying, it's a really exciting year for space politics, and I think the political side is more exciting to watch unfold than even the technology and the engineering, except maybe for what Bert is doing with Spaceship One. But this all started back in January when President Bush made his space vision policy statement. What do you think about that?
It has been a very exciting year for space policy in general, really going back to last year in the Columbia tragedy. But without a doubt, one of the biggest stories of this year, of the last 2 years, has been the new vision for space exploration that President Bush laid out in January. I think is almost precisely right in terms of setting forth a vision of what NASA can go do, what it can go and be in terms of being an exploration agency and getting out of operations and getting out of low Earth orbit and getting out of some of the more pedestrian stuff it's been doing, you know, really for the last 20 years or more. And the fact that there wasn't a lot of extra money to throw at NASA to say, okay, here's, you know, several tens of billions of dollars of extra money. That's how you're going to pay to go to the moon. Instead, what NASA has to do is it has to give up what it, some of what it's been doing in the past in order to, you know, get to that future. And it will be a real challenge for NASA and the industrial contractors that work for it and the universities and the whole community that exists around NASA to see whether or not they can embrace this future and really go out and be an exploration agency and an exploration program, or whether they want to keep being sort of the, you know, we're in charge of civil space, you know, here in Earth and low Earth orbit.
Stay with us, Jim. We have a caller on the line who probably has a question or a comment and wants to go for the trivia question. Are you still with us, caller? Caller, are you still with us? I think he left the line. Caller, are you still there? Going once, twice? You're there?
Hi, David.
Hi. First name and where are you calling from?
I'm John. It's John McKnight.
Oh, hi, John. It's my roving reporter from Phoenix. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Can you answer that question?
Long March?
Absolutely. So you get your choice of Mars Book, Space Trivia, or the CD.
I'll take Mars Book.
It's on its way. Any questions or comments for our guest today?
I will probably call back with a question. Right now, just give my best to Jim, and I'll probably be talking to you guys later.
Okay, well, he's hearing you, so he's got your best. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
That was John Carter McKnight, our great reporter who did such a great job for that first Spaceship One flight. Jim, you talk about can NASA make the adjustments? What about the other two parts to this? Do you think the American general public is ready for the type of space policy program that President Bush is proposing? And what about Congress? What are their impressions about all this?
Well, the American people, you know, there's polling data all over the map on this, but I think what the American people want is two things from space. First and foremost, they want to be part of it. They want to find, they want whatever the government's doing in space to be inclusive, to make it possible for new businesses, new industries, new enterprises to get started, to make it possible for more scientists to do things in space. They expect space to be opened as a frontier. And so they want the policy of the government to make it possible for more people to do more things in space, possibly including themselves going at some point, personally. But beyond that, I think the American people think that space as a frontier is something that the government should really take the role of pushing back the frontier and exploring beyond what they've already done. And so, you know, if you sat down and say, here's what's going on, do you like this or don't you like this? Or do you think that NASA should be focused on exploration or flying the space shuttle in circles around the Earth? They'd probably say exploration. Congress is a different matter. Congress has to provide the funding for NASA every year in the appropriations process and has to oversee NASA and how it manages its programs. And there's a lot of skepticism in the Congress as to whether or not NASA can really do this or not. You know, the vision was announced, and they didn't have a detailed plan yet. They didn't have certainly didn't have a price tag that NASA was comfortable sharing at first. And so, you know, and some other issues have gotten caught up with the exploration agenda, like the whole Hubble cancellation. And so there's some skepticism, plus the fact that, you know, we're at war, we have a deficit, the economy isn't doing as well as some people would like it to, And so there's an argument for, well, how can we provide NASA any additional funding, even the limited additional funds that the president proposed? And so there's skepticism. There's, you know, maybe some difficulty in finding the money. But I don't think Congress is against exploration or against this new direction. I thought it was very politically noticeable that in January of an election year, President Bush announced that he was basically going to be retiring the space shuttle in 6 years. And no Democratic office holder in Florida or candidate in Florida said this is a bad thing for 3 to 4 months. It took 3 to 4 months for any of the representatives who would conceivably be defenders of the space shuttle and continuing to fly the space shuttle, you know, well into the next decade, to start saying, wait a second, we really don't want to lose America's only way of getting astronauts into space. It took literally 4 or 5 months for someone to criticize the president's agenda on that issue. So I think there's a willingness to embrace the change, because I think everyone knows that NASA needs to go back to being an exploration agency.
Why do you think NASA, reforming NASA, the space policy, just isn't a campaign issue?
I don't think it's a campaign issue to the extent that it's just not an issue that most people see as a determining factor in how they're going to vote or how they're going to volunteer their time. You know, there could be hundreds or thousands of people who are listening to our voice right now for whom it would be a huge issue. And, you know, if you like Senator Kerry's stand on space, then by all means go and contribute money and time to his campaign, and likewise to the Bush campaign or one of the other independent third-party candidates for president. Or better yet, because you'll definitely make a better difference, you'll be seen more, volunteer in a congressional race. But very few districts, and certainly not in the country as a whole, is space seen as a determinative issue. Now, David, you and I think of space as literally a potential cornucopia of new jobs and industries, as a wellspring of new discoveries in health, in telecommunications, in environmental monitoring, in tourism, in space solar power to come up with new clean energy sources. So the long-term view of space to us is sort of the long-term view of America from England back in the 17th century. In other words, limitless possibility. And if you thought, you know, 400 years ahead, you'd say, wow, we're starting a superpower. We're starting a country that will be the richest, most powerful country on Earth. And you and I think of space that way. And if most people thought of space that way, then they would see, in terms of the interests of their children and their grandchildren, space would be one of the most important issues. But we don't tend to talk about space that way. The space program and its leaders don't tend to talk about space that way. And so it isn't seen as a relevant issue to most citizens, and therefore most politicians don't see it as that important.
Do you think that going into space, developing the commerce, the exploration, the scientific missions, all of it, do you think it is essential to our future, like so many of us believe and so many of my guests say, or do you think it is someplace in between, or it really isn't essential? It's more
I'll raise you one, David.
Okay.
Whether or not we start to relate to space as a frontier in this country, whether we as a frontier nation start to relate to space as something that has to be of, by, and for the people, and not just a government agency or a few government agencies and their contractors, but literally as something that requires the energy, the drive, the creativity, the resources, the inspiration of our entire nation. And if the government doesn't start being more inclusive and opening up space to the rest of us, then all of the strengths that democratic capitalism bring to bear on any enterprise, whether it's space exploration or medicine or anything, will be denied to space. and other countries will surpass us, and we will eventually turn inward. By not embracing the next frontier, we will not be as free as we could be. We will not be as prosperous as we could be. We will not be as secure as we could be. And we will not be as wise and as knowledgeable as we could be. And, you know, you don't have to think that you're some sort of an America firster to want this country to be as advanced and capable and leading as it can possibly be, you know, to create a better life for our citizens, to create a better life for people around the world. You know, it would be a tragedy if we didn't embrace this opportunity. So it's not just a matter of whether or not space is important. It's how we go about space. If we don't, you know, start really dreaming great dreams in space and start holding our elected officials and policymakers and the leaders of the space program accountable for whether or not they are in fact opening space, whether or not they are in fact making the human settlement of space possible, and voting against them when they don't do that, when they make decisions that hold on to the past rather than invent the future, then they are literally denying America's birthright. They are literally denying our children and our grandchildren the kind of hopeful future that they deserve to have, because, after all, this is America. And so I would say, you know, it is literally life or death for freedom on the planet, whether or not this country, in a positive, peaceful, economically oriented way, opens up the cosmos.
We're coming up on our break. Let me see if I can get this question that Betsy has sent in from Tucson. And she says, if your analysis is right, how do you motivate, lead, and persuade Americans and our government to see space as you have just put forth? And also, is it America's responsibility to lead in this way, or why can't another country do it if we falter?
Well, other countries can lead, but I don't know if other countries will be as committed to opening up space for everyone else as we are. So, again, it's not not intended as a, you know, as a parochial or pro-American thing. I'm just saying that, you know, I know that when we create new opportunities, we don't hold them back. We share them with other people. As far as how you share it with other people, you just talk to them. You find out what someone else is interested in, whether it's education, the environment, jobs, you know, whatever, and then talk to them about how space could make a difference. Now, they're not necessarily going to get as passionate about it as you are, but if they could just see that an open frontier in space could make a difference to them and the dreams and visions they have for the future, then you will be tapping into what they're passionate about. And then they can see, okay, I'll start to look at whether or not elected officials are supporting the right kind of space policy that will help me get what I care about.
I hear that music for our break. So I have a follow-up from Betsy that has come in. So that will have to wait until we come back from this break. Everybody stay right where you are. Our guest today on The Space Show, Jim Muncy of Polyspace.
The Space Show would like to take a moment to thank each of you for listening and giving this program both praise and support. The Space Show, like other talk radio programs, depends upon advertisers and sponsors for their help and financial support. Tell your favorite business about the great advertising opportunities still available on The Space Show. Our ad packages are affordable, creative, and effective. They include web links and advertising, streaming internet play, as well as our very own internet radio station, in combination with your ad, on the Tuesday evening KKNW Seattle Space Show broadcast. Ad packages can be customized to fit your budget, and we know that we can have a positive impact on your business. For more information about advertising or sponsoring The Space Show, call Dr. Livingston at 415-435-6018 or send an email to drspace@thespaceshow.com.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back to the Space Show. This is your host, David Livingston. Our guest today, Jim Muncy. And let me put out the telephone numbers for you again. If you're in the greater Seattle area, it is area code 425-373-5527. Outside of Seattle, it's toll-free 1-866-687-7223. Jim, just before the break, Betsy of Tucson sent in this follow-up question, and she wants to know if the space organizations, NASA, those charged with spreading the word and making the case for our being in space, are doing it effectively, or if we should be doing something differently.
Okay, well, NASA isn't charged with spreading the word. Various citizens organizations do try to promote space or their particular slant on space. The National Space Society is a largely U.S.-focused organization of citizens that generally believe space is an important national investment, and they tend to be supportive of commercial space activities as well. You know, the Mars Society is very focused on the human exploration of Mars. The Planetary Society is very focused on scientific exploration of space, although not exclusively robotic unmanned exploration. They also support human exploration beyond Earth orbit. The Space Frontier Foundation is a very active organization of people committed to commercial development of space and the kind of visions that you and I have been talking about. And there are others. I mean, so they're all doing it to one extent or another. And the question is, what organization fits with your particular view of space and your vision? And, you know, then go get involved. And if you have to start one, you know, maybe just one in your local community. Pick a project. Pick a single thing you want to do that will make a difference about your vision, and talk to people, enroll them in it, get them excited about it, and do one thing well. Don't try to do everything. Try to pick one thing that will make a difference in your mind and to the other people that you get involved in it, and go do that, and that will make a huge difference.
Besides the policy statement that President Bush spoke about back in January, with Burt Rutan and Paul Allen, Scaled Composites, their Spaceship One, and the XPRIZE, this has been some year so far for human spaceflight, which appears to be on the brink of being suborbital without the aid of any government vehicle. Your thoughts on all this?
Well, I think we may be at the very earliest days of the homebrew computer club of the early 1970s for space flight and rocketry. In other words, we're at the point now where people with totally private funding, obviously Burt Rutan with money from Paul Allen has a little bit more of an advantage than some of the other XPRIZE contenders and some of the other small companies that are developing concepts. But, you know, can in fact develop and fund and build and fly a vehicle to space. Not into orbit, can't do anything like what the space shuttle could do, but can actually fly someone into space for on the order of a few hundred thousand dollars or less. That gives people a personal experience of spaceflight. One of my clients, Dennis Tito, the first space tourist who paid the Russians 3 years ago to fly to the International Space Station, testified before Congress and has made this argument over and over again, is that, you know, the thing he wanted to do for the rest of his life and that he thought would make the biggest difference was to try to find a way so that more people could experience spaceflight. Because the joy and the excitement that he felt in that very first minute of zero gravity, that very first minute of being able to look down at the Earth, was as magical as the rest of the time he spent there. And, you know, most people can't afford $20 million for a ride to the space station. But a whole lot of people could save up and kick in $50,000 or $100,000 as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go to 60 miles and literally earn astronaut wings and be able to look down at the Earth and look through the edge of the atmosphere and see the darkness of the sky and see maybe their hometown or see, you know, at least where they're taking off from, and know that they actually flew in space, that they actually experienced a few minutes of zero gravity, and that they did it, that they got to touch the heavens. And there's a huge demand for this. Market studies done by Futron and other organizations have shown that there's a huge number of people in this country that would love to go into space once it becomes more affordable, so that they can do so. And then you have a real market for these new vehicles. And these vehicles, they can't do what the space shuttle can do. They can't do what big, expensive Delta or Atlas rockets can do. They can't launch large satellites into space. But they can launch people into a suborbital trajectory so that they get a few minutes of zero gravity, and they can make money doing it. And as they start to make money, more people will invest in these vehicles. The vehicles will grow. They will get to go faster and faster. And eventually, the magic of the marketplace will allow people to develop vehicles that can fly passengers all the way into space for, you know, an order of magnitude less than it currently costs buying a seat on a Russian Soyuz.
So,
that's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. And assuming that Spaceship One actually wins the X Prize, or the Da Vinci Project from Canada does it. They're the only two that have actually registered for dates to try for the X Prize. Does that mean that we are now at the suborbital tourism business stage, or what has to happen from that point forward?
Well, there's two things that have to happen. To me, it's not. Obviously, I think someone's going to win the prize, and I wish both contestants the best of luck in trying to win the prize. The prize has been the X Prize and the X Prize Foundation deserves a tremendous amount of credit for getting a lot of people out there trying and thinking about it and coming up with ideas and raising money and trying to build their own rockets. You know, some of them are better funded than others, but they all have ideas, and that is, after all, the democratic way, is to let a whole bunch of people try out their best ideas and see what they can do. That's the kind of creativity that a prize tends to inspire. But what you ultimately need is a market. And unfortunately, spaceflight is not, we're not inventing these new spaceships in the era of the barnstorming of aviation 100 years ago, when, you know, basically anybody could just buy an old World War I airplane and start flying people and taking them on rides to pay for the gasoline and make a little money, you know, taking people up in the air for the thrill of their lifetime. There's regulations. There are safety rules. There are international treaties that the U.S. has signed that make the U.S. government liable if you come down and hit a foreign national or property in another country. So there has to be regulation. The real question is will that regulation be a light-handed regulation that's streamlined, that simply focuses on protecting the safety of uninvolved third parties, or will we start to apply the same level of regulation as we do in commercial aviation, which after all is a 100-year-old industry? So one of the things I'm most excited about is that Congress has developed and the House of Representatives has passed and the Senate is currently considering legislation. It's called H.R. 3752, is the arcane name of the Commercial Space Launch Act Amendments Act of 2004, on it, sponsored by Chairman Rohrabacher, but with bipartisan sponsorship from other members, leaders of the Science Committee. And what it does is it sets a clear path for how these vehicles will be regulated. And it says that the Office of the Associate Administrator for Commercial Space Transportation in the Department of Transportation will have the authority to license these vehicles, and that they are encouraged to promote the growth of this new industry and help make this new industry happen. A year ago, a year and a half ago, when I first came to the Science Committee asking for this kind of legislation, they were saying, wait a second, this is kind of nutty. This is rich people going on joyrides in space. How is this relevant, to any of the important space issues? Well, it turns out that, even Chairman Bullard, the chairman of the House Science Committee, decided it was important enough that it really was the future of the aerospace industry, that the kind of innovative things that people like Burt Rutan and X-Corps and the Da Vinci Project and other companies are working on could really be the kind of revolutionary transformation of space transportation that personal computers were 30 years ago in the data processing industry. So, if that turns out to be true and legislation is enacted so that people can go and fly for revenue, because you don't want to just fly as an experimental vehicle and win a prize. You want to go get revenue, because that's what's going to justify future investment and building better and faster and more capable and safer and more reliable vehicles. And that's when the magic of the market happens, is when people figure out this is a way to make money. And when people figure out it's a way to make money, more people will invest and more people will get their ideas funded and more people will be able to build rocket ships. And, some of them will work and some of them won't, just like there's a whole bunch of computer companies that no one's ever heard of for 20 years, but they were big names back in the 70s. The only one that survives today is Apple. IBM didn't really come out with their first personal computer until 1981. So there's a whole, and that first generation of PC compatibles, a whole lot of companies don't exist anymore. There's a whole class of companies that made mini computers, Digital Equipment Corporation, Data General, and others. They don't make those kinds of computers anymore. And in fact, there's only one company left. It's called Hewlett Packard, and they make servers. But, they also make PCs. So it's been a transformation of how people do computing, from, roomful, literally computers that filled up rooms to carrying around more processing power in your phone than, an entire government agency might have had at its disposal 30 years ago.
What are the chances for H.R. 3752 to be approved by the Senate and signed by President Bush this year? Because if it's not, it starts over again, right?
Well, right now the Senate's going to be in session for another 3 or 4 weeks in September and early October. There's a chance that they will come back for a lame duck session after the election to complete work on appropriations bills. But they're very good. I mean, no one's really against this. There was some concern raised by a company in Oklahoma earlier this year about wanting to make sure that they would be categorized as a suborbital rocket and therefore would be licensed as a space transportation vehicle and just like everyone else wants to be. And now, their needs have been met and there's a compromise, and hopefully we can just, get the legislation out of the Senate Commerce Committee and onto the Senate floor. The only thing that causes me to worry that it might not be taken care of is just the press of business at the last minute. It's an election year. People are being very partisan right now. But because this legislation passed the House of Representatives earlier this year, 402-1, I'm not sure 402 members of Congress agreed that the sky is blue on any given day, but 402 members said this was a good bill. So hopefully the Senate will be able to move it. By all means, I would encourage your listeners, call up your senators and say, please make sure that H.R. 3752 is adopted by the Senate before the end of the year, so that it will go back to the House, be passed again, and then go to the President. Obviously, the President will sign it. That's not a question. But we just want to get it through the Senate as quickly as possible.
Are there any swing senators that are the most important to contact, or are they all important?
Well, the most important ones are the members of the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. That's the committee that will have to report the legislation out. It's chaired by Senator McCain from Arizona, and the ranking member on the Democratic side is Senator Fritz Hollings from South Carolina. Interestingly, Senator Kerry is a member of the Commerce Committee. But I really don't think there's going to be any partisan concern about it. It's just a matter of getting it done. And the, you know, last-minute press of business, you know, sometimes things fall through the cracks. So if people can write their senators or call their senators and say, we would really like to see this legislation passed, particularly if your senator is on that committee, that will really help. That could make a real difference.
What can you say about the likelihood of California's two senators, where I am, being supportive of this Feinstein-Boxer?
I think they'll both be supportive. There's a number of companies, not only Scale Composites, but X-Core and some others based out in California. Mojave Spaceport, obviously, is out there, first inland spaceport in the United States. All of which will benefit from a streamlined regulatory environment that promotes this new whole industry coming into being. And so I can't imagine that Senator Boxer and Senator Feinstein won't want to support it. Senator Boxer, I believe, is on the Commerce Committee, so by all means, people should write her and ask her to support the legislation. I think Senator Feinstein's actually been trying to help. I've talked to some of my clients in California to try to help make sure the bill gets out of the committee, even though she isn't on the Commerce Committee. So I think they'll be helpful. But it wouldn't hurt for them to hear from more voters.
Is Senator Kerry supportive of this type of policy?
I haven't talked to his staff. Again, I don't think there'll be a partisan problem with it. So because it's a totally bipartisan bill. I think the one of the concerns that I have heard raised about the legislation is that it provides for making sure that all the parties to a launch activity, including a launch of a person, i.e. a passenger, waive their right to sue everybody. And the reason that's done is to lower the cost of doing business in space. And that's if you launch if you're DirecTV and you launch a satellite on an Atlas V from Cape Canaveral, you agree not to sue, not only not sue the federal government or the Air Force or the other federal agencies that are involved or their contractors that are involved in the launch and safety activities at the Cape, but you also promise not to sue the launch company, either on behalf of the damages if you lose your satellite or if one of your employees is hurt. As part of a launch accident. It's all covered by insurance. And by agreeing not to sue everyone, everyone can just insure for their own damages. The question is, will that regime continue to be in place for commercial human spaceflight? Or do we want rich passengers to be able to sue small private entrepreneurs, if there's a problem with their flight? This is going to be a risky thing. I mean, spaceflight is risky. And at the very beginning, you aren't going to be able to promise the levels of safety that exist in a 100-year-old industry like aviation. So, you know, the legislation as was passed by the House of Representatives provides for a cross waiver, a mandate of what's called a cross waiver for 3 years. And hopefully that will stay in the final legislation.
I have a question for you from John in Phoenix. So let me put that out at this point. If commercial space is at the point that personal computing was at 30 years ago and the nation has higher priorities in space exploration, what do you think the chances are of seeing an opening of the space frontier in our lifetimes? How long do you think that timeline is?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm speculating. I'm hoping that we're at that beginning of that inflection point where things really started to take off in the computing industry. The big difference, though, between spaceflight and computers back then is there was no National Computer Agency. there was no national computer program. Obviously, there were, technology efforts. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency was developing and growing the ARPANET back then. But it was not seen as something that was primarily the responsibility of the government. Today in America, we still tend to think of NASA when we think of space. And so the news of Burt Rutan flying Mike Melville into space in June made a huge difference because it literally shattered the old paradigm that you had to be a government contractor, spending taxpayer dollars to do something like that. Even Dennis Tito flew using a vehicle that was developed during the Soviet Union's heyday, with money that was, paid for by the Soviet taxpayers and by the Soviet state. He wasn't flying on a purely commercial vehicle, even though he funded his ride himself privately. So, the first time someone flies all the way into orbit on a purely commercial vehicle will be a huge breakthrough. But we have this pre-existing civilian space program in this country. It's a good thing. I think it's great that we have a space agency and a space program, but it has to transform from being the agency that does space for everyone else to an agency that opens space to everyone else. And you tell me how quickly that transformation happens. I don't know.
Well,
I hope it happens.
I hope so too.
It has to happen. I think NASA's starting to realize that they really can't go back to just being what they've been in the past. They really have to try to embrace this new future and this new role for themselves. But, you can't expect organizations that have been a certain way for a long period of time to just suddenly change everything that they believe about themselves instantly. It takes time.
Absolutely. Do you think that it matters who wins the presidential election in terms of the space subjects and topics and issues we've been discussing tonight?
If only because President Bush laid out a vision earlier this year and therefore is committed to that and continuing that at some level, I think that could make a difference. I would like to hear more about what Senator Kerry would like to do in space. I would like to hear more about, what his vision is for space. They laid out some policy positions, many of which sort of are defenses of things that the Clinton administration did, in some cases good things they did, in some cases bad things they did on space. But there hasn't really been a sort of a vision of here's what we want to go do and why. So I haven't been as excited about what I've heard from them. Personally, I'm a Republican and I support the president's reelection. But I would say in terms of just looking at it in terms of space, it would probably be better if Bush were elected than if Kerry were elected. I'm sure there's all sorts of other factors you could look at to say, well, it would be better for space if we, increase taxes, because then we could, have less of a deficit and we could spend more money on space at NASA. Well, people can make that argument. I don't happen to agree with it, but people can make that argument.
Do you think that if Senator Kerry wins, is it neutral or is it a real setback, whereas President Bush winning might be a real plus?
I don't want to go there. I think the real question is going to be is whether the American people and their elected representatives in Congress as well as in the White House really do say, this is the way we have to go. And that's really going to be up to your listeners, whether or not their elected representatives say, however much money we can afford to spend on space, we don't want to just spend it on feeding the institutions of the past. We want to spend it inventing, planting the seed corn and inventing the future. And we want to try this new paradigm where the commercial sector plays a much bigger role in space. The Aldrich Committee report came out this summer and said basically the way NASA is going to get to do this is to embrace a much more entrepreneurial, much more commercial approach to space. Which doesn't mean that you're going to privatize everything the government does. After all, you don't privatize science. But the government focuses on science and new technology and actual exploration. You know, when Lewis and Clark went west, they didn't set up a government agency to do it. They didn't invent a new kind of animal to carry them. They used mules, and they used canoes they bought, and supplies they bought. So they were even commercially hired guides and commercially hired people. They weren't all, you know, made officers or enlisted people in the military. It wasn't an entirely government project. It was government funded. But there was private participation in it as well as government participation in it. And it opened up the whole Western United States to economic development and settlement.
Jim, we're coming up on the end of the first hour where the Seattle listeners are going to be signing off. So, first of all, for those of you listening on KKNW, if you have the ability to switch over on your computers, go to www.live365.com, type in the Space Show in the search box, and you can pick up the balance of our program tonight. Otherwise, you can hear it once it is uploaded to the website tomorrow. And on behalf of our guest today, Jim Muncy, and myself, we certainly thank you for tuning in to the Space Show and being with us. Make sure that you tune in on Sunday. That's the Internet Space Show, that Live 365 address. And then come back again next Tuesday for another Space Show. Jim, any real quick remarks that you'd like to leave the Seattle listeners?
You know, there's a lot of really exciting companies up there, Blue Origin, Kistler Aerospace. There's a lot of interesting entrepreneurs up there that really want to make a difference in space, and I just wish you all the best, and hopefully you can help lead America into this new frontier.
Okay. Stay on the line, Jim, and on behalf of our guest today, Jim Muncy and myself, good night to those of you in Seattle. Have a great, safe, peaceful, and prosperous week. Welcome back to the Space Show. This is the special edition portion, and this is your host, David Livingston, our guest today, Jim Muncy. Jim, I have a question that came in from Peter, and Peter is in Helena, Montana. And Peter says, you commented that you didn't want to go there regarding a possible difference between President Bush or Kerry. What about your thoughts on whether Americans have the, for lack of a better word, stomach for really pushing forward to space in a time when we are at war in Iraq and Afghanistan and we have so much division in our own country? Do you think we can handle space and embrace it, or is it just too much for us right now?
If space were just a federal government program like Apollo, that literally was being carried forward as almost as a memorial to John F. Kennedy, as much as anything else, in the 1960s, then I would say you might very well not see space be funded on a level funding or a slight increase in funding as President Bush has proposed. But what I'm arguing for is that we look at space not as just a federal program, but as a policy, as a national enterprise that is going to embrace and utilize the talents of the private sector and the resources of the private sector, money as well as ingenuity, to go make space flight more affordable, to go make space flight more pervasive, and to literally dramatically increase the return, economic, scientific, and otherwise, of space to our citizens. We want to normalize space. We want to make it part of the economy, part of the normal way this country does business. It already is in telecommunications and has been for a long time. It's growingly, you know, a growing part of our economy in terms of both geolocation and geospatial information systems. The transition that hasn't happened yet is in human spaceflight. So, you know, in the face of all of this, you know, war and partisanship and division, as the listener says, Burt Rutan still built a vehicle that took a person into space. So exciting things are possible, you know, even when you're having, you know, real challenges in the world. I mean, you know, the, you know, England planted the first successful colonies in North America, Jamestown in 1607 and then Plymouth in 1620, at a time when they were at war, you know, and had challenges in Europe. So it wasn't like it was, everything was hunky-dory. You know, if space is just this ceremonial, celebratory thing we do with excess money, if it's just a luxury, if it's just sort of a party we throw as a country or as a species, to say, aren't we cool? We can go into space. Well, then of course space gets tossed out instantly, you know, long before you start, you know, wondering whether or not you can afford to keep Social Security in business. I mean, I think there are going to be real challenges as the entitlements come due over the next 10, 20, 30 years to whether there will be much of a discretionary budget to fund things like space. So we better make the transformation now, because the situation for space funding isn't going to get any better. And we really need to get the private sector much more involved, not just to lower costs and to create more jobs and industries, but literally to transform what space is about so that people see, oh, well, that's just another thing that we're doing as part of expanding our economy, as part of advancing our national well-being, as opposed to this celebratory sort of, you know, a lot of people thought that Apollo was a neat stunt. Well, it wasn't a neat stunt. It was a transforming human event. But because it was done by the government and there was no citizen participation in it, there was no private participation in it, there was no plan for what you would do after going to the moon. You know, a lot of people, you know, thought they were going to get to go someday. But that was never actually part of the plan. And so it wasn't surprising that Congress and the American people said, okay, well, now we've gone and done that neat thing. Now let's go do real things like deal with Vietnam, deal with inflation, deal with the environment, and all these, and race relations, and all these other problems that we have on the Earth, thinking that space was irrelevant to that. Well, space wasn't, over the long term, irrelevant to those things. But in the short term, and the way space had been couched and the way space had been led, it was irrelevant. It was a neat thing. It was a luxury. It wasn't a core investment.
Well, a lot of people bought Pan Am tickets to go to space, me included.
Absolutely, because after all, I mean, the American philosophy, the American worldview is that if there's a neat place to go, we want to go. That's the way we think about, you know, new frontiers, is that we automatically assume that if it's a place that would be neat to go to, that you get to go at some point. And it has been this weird assumption that we've had for 40 years in space, is that you needed the right stuff to be able to go into space. That's a counterintuitive, almost un-American way of thinking about a frontier. I'm not saying that the people, you know, who you know, the Tom Wolfe or NASA or the people were bad or wrong. I'm just saying that was a very limited view of what space should be in relation to the American people.
This is an interesting question from Will in Columbus, Ohio, by email. And he said, many companies are coming up with business plans and trying to come up with financing to be able to do some sort of business venture in space or on the moon. Please ask your guest what his thoughts are on the abilities in general of the private sector to do real commercial space activities, given that most of these companies are nothing like a Boeing or a Lockheed.
Well, and I would argue that Boeing's and Lockheed, because of their shareholders and because of their, you know, all the businesses they're caught up in and the level of oversight they have, can't be entrepreneurs. They can't go out and do really crazy things. And not only is not every entrepreneur in space going to be successful, most entrepreneurs in space will not be successful. But if we just have a single government program doing space, It will either work or it won't. And often it doesn't produce terribly great results. If you have 100 different entrepreneurs trying their ideas in space, you don't have to pick the one that's going to work out. The market will, over time, choose the ones whose business idea makes more sense and who they think have a chance of actually carrying it off. Now, does that mean that even a really good businessman with some money will be able to go set up a tourist hotel on Mars in the next 5 years? No, because that's insane. That's not going to happen anytime soon. It's a great vision to have, but you might want to talk to Bob Bigelow about doing something in Earth orbit first. You know, you have to raise enough capital, and space is expensive, and then you have to go actually get it done. And there's all sorts of political and regulatory risks, and then there's the huge risk, who's your customer? How are you going to make enough money doing this to pay back your investors, to justify the investment in the first place? It's all very well to say, well, I want to have a private mission to the moon. Yeah, well, sure. A lot of people, if you handed them $1 billion, they might be able to come up with a way to go to the moon. But who's going to hand you $1 billion?
I don't know. How are you going to return it to them?
Well, that's the question. That's right. I mean, so, you know, that's why I thought Lunokhorp had a really great concept with a fairly low-cost rover that has a large market of people who would get to, you know, tie into it through telepresence. But even that was too hard to do unless they could also use NASA as an anchor tenant for the rover. And so Lunokhorp went away. No, there's one of the companies I work for is called Constellation Services International. Came up with a really innovative way to send people around the moon, basically an Apollo 8 mission, using the Soyuz spacecraft that would already be at the space station and allowing basically the visiting crew that visits the space station to take that Soyuz. You launch a large container of supplies and power and a bathroom on some sort of expendable launch vehicle. The Soyuz rendezvous with it, and that upper stage of the rocket sends the whole package around the moon. So for the marginal cost of some extra heat shields on the Soyuz and the cost of the expendable launch vehicle and the combination bathroom, storage closet, you know, kitchen, whatever you're launching as a very small short-term, the equivalent of a service module to the command module of Apollo, you could have a mission to the moon. So say on the order of $100 million, 3 people could go around the moon. Is there a market for that? Is NASA interested in sending someone around the moon within 3 to 4 years? Not necessarily, because they're focused on developing their own vehicle in the time frame of 2014 or later that could first go into orbit and then go to the moon.
But what about the Russians? Would they be interested in the potential financial gain of having that vehicle?
But they don't have a lot of spare capital.
So they would co-venture or partner?
So they might co-venture with you to do it. But the question is who's the customer? How do you CSI has gone out and talked publicly about this concept, you know, because we think there might be some interesting entertainment or sponsorship or commercial prospects here. You might have a foreign government that wants to pay for their nation to be the first nation that's not from the United States to send someone around the moon. You might have a tourist who wants to pay for that extra, you know, a week at the space station and then a week and literally be the first tourist to fly around the moon. So there might be, you know, but that's not where CSI is focusing its business efforts on. It's focused on things more short-term, things with a larger market like ISS resupply. You can have a great idea in space, but if you can't figure out how to make money off of it and how to actually put together the team that can do it, I mean, CSI has a great team.
Absolutely, yes.
But the question is how do you fund that mission? You have to have a customer or a set of customers to make it work out. And just because you have a better, you know, a lot of people say that it's about the rocket science. It's not the rocket science, people.
Absolutely.
And as a politician, it's not even the politics, although politics usually has a much greater role in whether or not you're successful than the technology does. The real question is the economics. Can you make it a business or not? Can you actually show investors that you can make money, that you have a good chance of making money, so that they'll want to risk their money for you to go try out your idea? You know, maybe the government will be a customer, but you probably have to have more customers than just the government, or at least beyond just NASA. I mean, it isn't right for us in the commercial space industry to say, okay, NASA, it's your job to make us profitable because we have a better idea. That's not America. You know, you have to eventually be able to show that there will be non-NASA or non-governmental customers for your services. Or, you know, you're not gonna get NASA to want to buy from you because they'll want to share those costs with other customers as well.
Jim, in the few remaining minutes of the show, focus on what the listeners, what can people do in the tangible, in the here and now, to have the most impact to help this country become spacefaring and all of that means? What's the most important couple of things that we could all be doing?
Go get really rich and invest in a space company. I mean, literally, that may be one of the most powerful things that people can do is to go build up enough capital and a network of friends with capital that you can at some point, when you identify a good business idea and a good team and a good concept, you can actually raise the capital to make it happen. I mean, starting your own business in space isn't necessarily something you should go do right away, but preparing yourself to do that or finding a company where your capital can make a difference and investing in it will make a bigger difference than anything else I can think of. Now, most of us don't have a few extra $100,000 sitting around that we can invest in a space company. So short of that, go share your vision. Go talk to students. Go talk to your elected representatives. Go say, here's why space is important to me. Here's why I want you to take this approach to space rather than that approach to space. You know, join an organization. You know, find a way to volunteer your time. Find a way to go identify people that, you know, find a way you can volunteer and do research. You know, find a university that you can go talk to. Find a way that you can learn more, do more, and participate more in some part of this grand adventure of opening up the space frontier. But the one thing you really need to do is make sure that what you're doing and what you're working on really is aligned with opening the frontier. Don't just become a supporter of somebody else's project. Don't just go say, well, I think Mars is neat, so I'm going to go join the Mars Society and then go be one of a few thousand people that are supporting Bob Zubrin's vision of Mars. I don't have any problems with human exploration of Mars, but I think that organization has a fairly limited view of what's possible. Likewise, don't just sign up as a member of the Planetary Society or any other group. Don't just sign up. Don't just send a check. Ask yourself the hard question, how is this project or this organization or talking to this group of students or whatever you're going to do, how is that really aligned with your vision? How is that really going to open up the space frontier so that we all get the benefit down the road? It's not easy. It's not, you know, it's the easiest thing in the world to say, I like space, I'll send a check to NSF or whoever. You know, that's the simplest thing to do. And we're all busy. You know, we all have lots of things we want to do. We all have our money's all overcommitted. But really ask yourself, how can I really make a difference for my vision? How can I really, you know, hold an elected official to account on this one thing, this one decision he has to make about space this year? How do I influence that decision he makes? And you can make a huge difference that way.
I don't think I've ever had a guest put it out so specific and so clearly as what you have in the last 3 or 4 minutes in terms of opening the frontier. And I hope that people copy it down or, you know, cut it from the CD or whatever they do and, you know, play it over and over again as a mantra, because really it is the most concise, the clearest way that people can be effective and powerful in the 3 years that I've been doing this show, what you just said in the past 5 minutes.
Well, thank you.
And with that, we are plumb out of time for the show tonight. And I can't thank you enough for being a guest on the Space Show. And
thank you so much for having me, and thank you for doing the show. I think your goal of being this forum for people to talk about, you know, how we can make this grand adventure happen is just wonderful. And, you know, I look forward to coming back as soon as you'll have me.
Absolutely. And opening up the frontier and making it available to people, that's what this is all about. Because when we do that, Jim, that's when we all start benefiting from what you talked about earlier in the show that space has to provide for us. And that's the path. And I see it as absolutely essential, just as essential as President Clinton's heart surgery was over the weekend. So that's my 2 cents worth.
Okay.
Any last final words? Do you have a way for people to contact you, or do you want them to do so through me if they have any follow-up questions or comments?
They're welcome to send any follow-up questions to you, and you can send them on to me. I would definitely encourage people to go to www.space-frontier.org. and learn more about the Space Frontier Foundation. I think it's one of the most effective organizations out there for really changing the whole conversation and dynamic of space policy, not only in the country, abroad. You know, there's the Space Frontier Conference coming up in October in Los Angeles. But by all means, go out there and just, you know, find a way to make a difference. Find a way to put your vision out there and actually do something. However small it is, but that moves your vision one day sooner, because that's what's going to get us all there.
Great way to end the program tonight. Thank you again, and on behalf of Jim Muncy and myself, I wish all of you a great, happy, successful, and peaceful week. Come back on Sunday, and then again next Tuesday. Good night, all.